Guten Tag, meine Damen und Herren. Ich bin John Ruby.
I love
it. Here is Corbin Coyle.
Hey, everybody.
I'll break it out every once in a while. In a mood for a little German. We've got a German audience, Corbin.
Yeah, we do. It's true.
When you want to learn Portuguese and get our Portugal and Brazilian audience going, wake them up.
I don't want to brag, but I took Spanish 1 3 times. So,
oh, gosh. Not a brag.
Was not good at it.
Not a brag. Feeling cheeky today, guys. Cheeky. We have a fun topic. Corbin, we know you are a voracious reader. What's a book that influenced you as a kid? Now we're going back a little bit.
Oh, as a kid? Yeah. Reading is one of those. I do read, but I don't read as much as I would like to. But when I was a kid, I loved what was that series called? It was a Cirque du Freak. It was like this vampire novel thing. It was like just some like just nothing kind of book. It was great. And then as I grew up, there's this one book I really liked called Solaris by Stanislaw Lem, I believe is his name.
Okay.
And there's a movie that was I want to say a Russian film that was amazing. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. I think it's one of the most beautiful things. It's such a strange book, strange movie, but that experience of reading it and then watching it is one of my favorite things in the world. I think they did a movie for Cirque du Freak as well, but I don't think it did well.
Interesting.
Vampires and like a kid on the circus. It's a very weird concept, but I liked it.
Yeah. What age, when you're saying age, do you think you were?
25. No.
In your 20s.
No, I was probably like middle school.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And it was good. It was an easy read. I mean, I'm sure if I picked it up now, I'd probably understand why. Like, it was probably very simple to read and kind of quirky and fun. But the Solaris book I read in college, and I really liked. I've read that actually a couple times. Very strange concept, like this outer space kind of planet kind of thing, and it's a good one. What about you? Yeah. You read you get books all the time. I don't know if you read.
I do get books all the time. No, I'm starting to read again, which is good. Yeah, I've missed it so much. You know, it's funny, like I remember in high school I dove into sci-fi, so I really got into Ray Bradbury stuff, like Fahrenheit 451.
That's a good one.
I really thought that was fun, and I loved one story I'll never forget that I just loved was like this guy. He was saving up to like get like a clone of himself because he wanted to like leave his like wife or girlfriend. So he's saving up all this money. He's kind of like skirting it away, and he saves up money. Finally, he saves up enough money, and then like something happens, and he's like his wife does something kind of a little weird, and then he like listens, and like she doesn't have a heartbeat, which means she's been a clone.
Oh,
so his wife left him at some point, and he doesn't know when, which is what the movie was gonna pull on her, but she pulled it a long time. Isn't that great?
Wow,
I loved that to it. I was like, oh, wow. That was one. And then younger, going back, I loved Encyclopedia Brown, who was like, boy detective and like the Choose Your Own Adventures. I've always really liked like mysteries and trying to kind of solve it and figure out and, take the clues and
Encyclopedia Brown. Those were always fun, the little like mystery and trying to figure it out. I was never very good at them.
When I first came out to California, I did a like a murder mystery show. It was kind of like a murder mystery.
Oh yeah, it was like a job, right? Like you were like one of the.
Yeah, it was like a job. Yeah, it was a job. Cool. But what I didn't like about it was like we'd pick a different like whoever the kind of murderer was like each weekend, and the story had nothing to do with it. I think I mentioned this before. The story had nothing to do with like who. It was just a random. I was like, that's so frustrating.
They have no
so
idea.
I'm in the audience and I'm paying attention to all the clues, and then it's still just random. I'm like, that pissed me off.
Yeah, it should be like you picked up the candlestick and you are the butler kind of thing.
Yes, if you pick up the clues, then you get the person. So I was like, that seems wrong. So I like now more with like escape rooms and stuff where it does
makes
make
sense.
It leads to the thing. Yes, it makes sense. So well, cool. I'm excited to get to our guest today. Glad that she's here. I want to welcome to the show actor, writer, and creative guide Barbara Howland. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Thanks for being here. Any books that popped in your noggin?
I was just biting my tongue that whole time, trying not to gasp because I'm in like kindred spirits. I love sci-fi growing up. I mean, sci-fi is still it for me, but same sort of an adaptation. One of my favorite movies growing up was The Neverending Story. Amazing. And once I got old enough to actually read that book, I mean, the movie is 1/10 of this amazing story. I love that book.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, Neverending Story. I remember that. Yeah, that movie so well. It's like Neverending Story for me and Labyrinth were all kind of like around the same like
yes.
world, right? You know,
and Princess Bride for me. Those were probably the top
yes.
three.
Yes, Barbie. Like those three, all kind of. I don't know. You're right. They all kind of blended in this world of movies. But I never read the Neverending Story book. That's awesome. Well, great. Well, we are super excited that you're here. One of the things we want to kind of jump right into. That I'm a fan of, and I was talking to Corbin about it. It's kind of newer to him. That's why I want to talk about it, which is The Artist's Way. Can you tell us a bit about that book and, you know, how it's important and creatives can use it? Kind of start there.
Yeah, it's fantastic. This book has been around since the early 90s. Julia Cameron, who wrote it, really started doing this in groups of creatives, I believe in New York, in the 80s. And it's like a 12-week recovery system, really. It's not just reading the book, but there are tasks to do every week. You do morning journaling every day. And then once a week, you take your inner self, your inner kiddo, on an artist date. So it's really this process of recovering what I feel now doing in groups for so long, trust in your own intuition, your own flow, what we were just talking about, what actually lit us up to become artists and recovering a sense of passion in that and reclaiming your own flow.
I loved that. So, and I definitely, at some point in my journey, you know, heard about The Artist's Way and got into Morning Pages and, you know, kind of the artist date. I love doing things like that. Do you think a great, like, where if someone's interested, do you think, I mean, just getting the book and starting to work on it, do you think finding a group, finding an accountability group, how do you think someone should approach it if they're interested?
Yes. So that's the common story is most people who come to me have had the book sitting on a shelf for 20 years. they go, I've started it four times and I've gotten so far along and I stop. So I think a group is really important. You know, that's why I like working with artists in groups. We need some accountability, but also it can feel really lonely for us, especially as actors. I don't know about everyone else in LA, creating like in a vacuum. And so often we don't get that collaboration. We're not constantly on set every day, maybe. So having this group to also be mirrors for each other and celebrate, really celebrating our wins along the way feels really important. Mm.
Are there different, like, I guess, milestones or different things that you want to do depending on your artistry? Like if you're like a painter, does writing every day still help? If you want to be a writer, obviously that may lean more that way. How does that work?
Yeah, it's so funny because everyone shows up and thinks, I'm an actor and this is going to lead me to that dream role, or I'm a writer and I'm going to finish my book in this 12-week process. That's never what happens. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What I find so beautiful is reclaiming the passion is often people who are a vocational artist. Let's say I had a painter do it. There was nothing about the journey that was about painting for him. He recovered this like artist state of surfing, which he had always loved to do. And this became the thing that lit him up in a different way. Mm-hmm. And that passion did bleed out into totally changing and expanding his painting business, but that's usually not it. And I tell everyone, it's very non-linear, the process. So it's making us make friends with that and trust like following the breadcrumbs. Mm-hmm. And that it's not silly or frivolous to be like, surfing is going to help my painting business, because it is.
Yeah, it's like a car wash for your soul. Like, kind of just like gets you reset. Yes. Yeah.
I like it. I like that, Corbin. Car wash for your soul. That's right.
Yes.
Wow, over 100 episodes in, Corbin
finally witty.
Corbin, that's amazing. And I can't even give it to you. I got to make a joke out of it. You know, I take that back. We're going to erase that, Corbin. That was awesome, man. Car wash for your soul. I love that. That's so good.
That's good.
So good. So how do you advise people, Barbara, to like overcome blocks, let's say? I feel like that's a big thing with creatives. It's like, I feel blocked, you know, I have writer's block, I'm actor's stuck. Like, do you encourage, you know, working through with the artist's way? Do you, you know, how do people kind of approach blocks?
It's so interesting. I mean, it's true. The only way out is through, but it's usually not how we expect it, which is sort of what I was just saying. Most people who show up to my groups or are doing The Artist's Way, it turns out they need a break. They're really burnt out, especially if they're vocational artists. So sometimes getting through the block is realizing if I take some pressure off my artistry, if I recover the sense of play, whether that's painting, if I'm an actor or surfing or whatever it may be, that block kind of starts to dissolve of its own accord and we can walk through it in a different way. But I feel often we're putting up so many blocks unconsciously with this pressure, or this linear thinking on our artistry. So actually one of the biggest things for people is I say, take a break. And that doesn't mean you have to stop completely, but taking a break in Artist's Way in my groups is like, let's go explore this other avenue. And that road is kind of going to open then of its own accord. Mm.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. Do you, when you're like kind of in these groups and kind of guiding, do you feel like, have you gone through this yourself? Is that one of the reasons it means so much to you? Or
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. If you want to go a little backstory, I mean, that was
Yes.
me. I had come out here right after college, drove cross country, was like, this is it. I always knew I wanted to be an actor, and yet I had such linear thinking about it. I had such pressure and tunnel vision around it. Writing now wasn't even something I could have imagined. I was like, if you're an actor, you're just going to be an actor, you know? And I had put so much pressure around it and then listened to all of these so-called rules of the industry or lost my own intuition, my own way in it. And it was a friend referring me to Artist Way many years ago. And I did it in a group, and everything changed. When you're like, the job changed, the relationship changed, it changed a lot for me. But it really that, I think it was a recovering a sense of connection to trusting my own intuition and getting back to what lit me up about this. And I started writing, I started doing other things, and acting was fun again.
Do you find like you learn something new every time you do one of these sessions with people, or is it kind of just really just a refresh and it's nice?
Oh God, every single time. I mean, I'm learning on repeat. I'll be here doing Artist Way forever because I say it's pretty wild. I've highlighted almost the whole book, and then you'll read it again, and I'll be like, oh God, that's exactly what I needed to hear in my life right now. Because this 12-week process really is like embracing where we're at in the growth, in the creative cycle, and knowing it's a spiral path that's not going to end. So I actually think new blocks are always going to come up, what you were just saying, John. And it's like where I'm at in the growth cycle. This book is going to help with that again.
Yeah, I like this this idea. Repetition does not lessen the prayer, right? And I was
Yeah.
like, oh man, like that is so, I really like that. I thought that was really true. You know, this idea of like, well, I've gone through it a couple times, so you know, is it, but you're still finding new stuff or you're still discovering stuff. And I find that with like great plays. I find that with a great, you know, movie, great books. It's like you reread it and like you've changed and it's changed and new things are revealed. And I think The Artist Way is a book like that too, for sure. I mean, even the couple times I've kind of
Completely.
revisited and done the first two chapters and then quit, like you said, those first two chapters always hit me differently, you know? But no, I love that. Can you tell, let me ask you this, this is interesting. Can you tell the people that are like for the 12 weeks are going to be in it and doing it, and the people that like what's the difference maker? You know what I mean? With the people that stick with it and the people that kind of get stuff out of it and the people that like maybe don't.
People that stick with it, and I think again, what do we find in like me doing it with groups is we really embrace what she's saying in it, which is like finding a sense of play. But most people think, or especially the healing side of it, of what comes up, people don't think it can be that easy, I think. I'm constantly saying, like, could it be easier? And that's also just not what we're told, you know, that virtue has to be hard work and it's difficult and you're climbing the mountain. And what Julia Cameron's really saying is, like, that spiral path can be a slip and slide of fun. And we play a lot more together, I think, than people realize. And when we're doing it on our own, it is a deep dive, so it feels a little lonely as opposed to me instilling, like, let's be playful and joyful in this process.
Yeah, I like that, Corbin. We found that in class, haven't we?
Yeah,
Sometimes where
absolutely.
like, sometimes a scene is like we way overcomplicate it, you know. And I say if you kind of find that one thing, you can like zip line through the scene. You know, it's just like, zhoosh, and you're like, whoa, like that
Yes.
went so fast. Like it felt so easy, so fun, whatever that is. And I think you're totally right. Sometimes there's, you know, we get into details, we get into nuance, which can be necessary at times, but then also that can totally clog up the system, you know. And people,
Yes.
yeah, it's
Getting
frustrating.
to, I think, you know, and what I keep affirming to people, when we're trusting our own intuition and what actually lights us up, not the should, have to's, and musts that come up with all of it, we
Yep.
find what you just said, that zip line is like our flow state. Everyone wants to feel that. I just jumped in the scene and I was totally present. It's like I blacked out and then it was over. So, but that requires us trusting ourself and our own intuition and our own flow.
Let me ask you about that. How do you approach if people, I think sometimes creatives can be afraid to reveal to friends and family this creative side, or you know, kind of expose it. You know, they want to keep it like just for themselves, and even to strangers and stuff. You know, how do you approach that? That's interesting to me.
Yeah, one thing I will say to a lot of people is I say, this is like the sacred space. If you don't want to share outside of the Artist Way space that we cultivate right now, don't do it. Because actually the book, as you've started, John, many times, has starts with recovering a sense of safety. This is actually a very big thing. And especially for us actors, I mean, look, our whole body, our voice, paintbrush, paint canvas, we're putting it all up there. That's what we're using. And if we don't have this sense of safety, it's just not sustainable. But that's for any artist. It's sort of saying, if we don't feel safe in this, our inner kiddo can't come out and play.
Yeah, I really resonate with that because I think always like, like with actors, life on set can be very stressful and stuff, but you still want a director, a team that trusts each other, and you feel safe in the sense to try things versus like shut down, and I think that's such a even if there is stress, which there can be, you still want that environment that you're talking about, and I think that's where people do their best work, and I think about that with class too, I think, or in a group we're talking about just that idea that if we don't feel safe or trust, it's hard to kind of grow and reveal ourselves. We kind of want to play it safe, right? We don't want to go
Completely.
outside, right? This idea of trust, what does that go back to? Your childhood? No, I'm just kidding. No, but let me ask you this. With trust, and it's funny because I'm listening to something that has to do with like executive coaching and things like that, and they talk a lot about trust in this thing I'm listening to. It's about this guy Bill Campbell, who was the coach. He was a football coach, but then he was a coach for like the guys who started Google and Steve Jobs, all these people. But one of the things they said he was really good at was building trust. How do you think trust is built? I know this is a big question, Barbara, but I'm just curious about that. Your thoughts on that.
Well, one of my intentions, I'll say, showing up today is, things are always going to come up in us. Triggers, like I was excited, nervous, all of the things to show up here today. And like setting an intention is actually, I think, me reclaiming that energy and choosing to put something different out into the world and trust. At the end of every group, I tell everyone, like, what's your intention now for this week moving forward? What's your intention with that? I think it lets us be open and active with that energy. And one of the biggest intentions, especially for me, still with something like this, is like, I will just show up and be my most integrous self. And if I'm going to show up and do that, I think that in and of itself is like, I'm going to show up and trust these two people I don't know. And that energy, I think we're going to be in reciprocity then, and we're going to do that together.
I like that idea you said about, having integrity with it, because I think that's one thing that a lot of people come to LA, actors, maybe they're seeking validation, maybe they're seeking people to love them, to look at them, to like, say you're awesome, you're talented, whatever that is.
Yes.
And and because of that, I think you can have people pleasers, like or even I think for myself, for a long time I would try to be what I thought other people kind of wanted. And with what you're saying, this idea of integrity, I think I've kind of refound myself as I've gotten a little older and a little more confident and secure in myself. And I feel like a lot of my integrity has come back in a certain sense. And I think what's wonderful about that is it's like now people get to feel my authentic self, and then I'm okay with them responding to that, however they respond, right?
Completely. And same. I mean, recovering people pleaser, codependent,
Yes.
perfectionist, all of the things. And this is why I love Artist Way. It touches on all of those things. And you're like, God damn it, Julia Cameron. She really makes you question all of it. So I've questioned all of it as well. And it is a slow process. Like showing up one trust at a time is still
Yes.
how I trust in the face of that. Yeah.
How do you handle with when it comes to like just the stresses of a job, the stresses of something like a creative work, and like kind of making sure that you do have this trust and being able to have this positivity? Because it seems like you both actually have this like this very like positive light on an aspect of the world. But sometimes people kind of get really pulled down into the I got to get these pages out today. I got these do how do you have this creative outlook that's open, but it needs to be narrowed down to today or something?
I talk so much about the difference between this idea of rigor and discipline and hustle mode that, the world and of course the industry is putting on us. And that is something I'm always saying in my groups is let's switch it to a ritual. Like, how is this going to be a ritual that does invite in play, expansiveness, exploration, as opposed to, again, that linear tunnel vision that may work for a while. It really does for people. But we're going to lose the joy. We're going to lose the passion. We're going to shut down again our own flow. So if we make it a ritual and again, just get intentional with the energy, I'm going to show up today and write totally differently than I did yesterday. But I'm going to let go of that like militaristic discipline around it.
I like that. Yeah. Cause it feels like, John, you talk about this all the time, just like this like brick by brick mentality. It's like, you're not going to build a house immediately. It's going to take some time. And sometimes you just got to just start. And then that's a big part of the ritual aspect of it.
Yeah. And you hit the word, Corbin. I like that word ritual because I think there's something like, I almost think it's a little, you know, it feels a little bit sacred, but it feels like something that you want to do. It feels like something that kind of honors you, kind of honors what you're doing. And I like that versus like, you know, I'm stuck doing this thing. I have to do this thing. You know, I'm burdened by this thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes we have to do crummy jobs. I totally get that. I've done my fair share of crummy jobs. Barbara, one time I stuffed envelopes for 8 hours at a lobby of a Wells Fargo. That was the worst temp job I ever had. So I've done crummy jobs, folks.
I literally have stuffed envelopes too for fundraisers when I was doing hour and hour. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, I didn't call that a ritual. I called that crummy. But that's all we're talking about here. What we are talking about, which I like, Barbara, is the stuff that like you said, lights us up, our passions are excited. You know, maybe we want to be a professional at it. Maybe we're a hobbyist, but you know, it's the thing and creating that ritual around it. I love that. And I have found a lot of, what I'm thinking about is, afterwards, that feeling you get. Do you know what I mean? Like sometimes yes. We kind of forget because we're on one side of the wall, but then that afterwards feeling is such a cool feeling of either accomplishment, of either I tried my best, of either I put everything towards it and it was, you know, it was amazing. It was, you know what I'm saying? Isn't that a cool thing?
Yes, I love it so much. And this is also why I think we need groups. We need collaboration because also there is like, you know, a child that will show up with that is the opposite, which is vulnerability hangovers, mm-hmm. which is we risk. And then you're like, oh God, what did I say? Was that this? Mm-hmm. As opposed to in groups, we can celebrate and be like, celebrate the risk. The rest isn't really in our control a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. Don't go to that like vulnerability hangover. Let's be in the celebration. Because if we don't celebrate, like you just said, Corbin, brick by brick with all of it, if your goal is to get the Oscar, that could happen next year. And you're going to be like, oh, I feel the same as I did a year ago. What's happening here? Like, can we celebrate the whole process along the way? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think you're also, when you're taking a risk, it's, and this is something I want to ask you about, which is kind of like beginner mind, you know, starting something new. Cause I also feel like we can be very critical of ourselves and it's hard to kind of go back to this place of beginner mind. How do you approach that?
Yeah, I bring that up in every group. It's so great that celebration that I'm talking about is quite simply, I tried. Right? The growth mindset is I showed up and I tried, like you were saying too, asking about maybe the ritual versus the rigor, Corbin, like affirming, I will just show up and try. If I write one paragraph today and tomorrow I'm like, delete it. That's how I keep moving forward, as opposed to the fixed mindset, which is it has to be perfect right away. I have to finish the thing immediately and puts this pressure on. So quite simply going, you tried, in my groups, whether people did morning pages just one day in a week or just showed up and sent one email. I'm like, that's what we have to celebrate. You tried. Mm. And that brings up, if I could, one thing too with that, when you bring up envelope stuffing in the day jobs, I think this is great because it's not all leap and the net will appear. Let's take some pressure off our artistry and like have the day job, do the thing you need to do. But what I find in artist's way is if we're doing the morning pages or whatever your ritual is first, you fill up your own creative well first, that antenna of inspiration or your own intuition is up all day then. So you could have done the morning pages, but you have to go to this 8 hour and you're stuffing envelopes, but that antenna is up and you're like, that was the next thing for my film. And you just jot it down on your phone real quick. I think that's the thing. Like, can we keep that antenna up and feel in for that? But we got to put the oxygen mask on ourselves first, like everybody says, and then it'll stay up.
Yeah, I think starting your day, or kind of like you're saying, getting your antenna up is such an important thing. And I've found that even, I drop my son off. I like to go to the gym in the morning. And even when I feel terrible or I'm a little bit sick or whatever, just even that movement after for the rest of the day feels better, even if that's really, really hard. And when I kind of like, let's say do something at night, it's like, well, it wakes me up then, but like now I'm trying to wind down for bed. So I really like you're saying, whatever that thing is for someone in the morning, some people it's coffee or whatever. If you know, getting things kind of going, morning pages is a great example. You know, that's, could you guys kind of talk to us a little bit about what morning pages are? I think it's a great way to start your day. Could you just kind of, so people that don't know?
Yeah, absolutely. It is three pages, stream of consciousness, which means it literally could be anything. And for most people, it is at the beginning. It's their to-do list. It's, I love what Julia Cameron calls them, blurts, the blurts that come up in our brain of like, why did you say that? Why did you do that? That wasn't good enough. Even getting that all out is like brain dumping any of it. Frees up space, puts the antenna up, like I was saying, for the rest of the day. So when people start, it can be anything. It can be absolutely anything. But I think the more we start to do it, what I find halfway through the process or sometimes later is, I call it the page and a half ahas, is after a page and a half, you kind of want to stop writing because you've brain dumped all this stuff. But that's the most ripe time when I think this like deeper voice or that inspiration voice starts to pipe up. So to push past that, once you've brain dumped out, we're going to start listening deeper to this deeper voice, this deeper intuition. So that's really usually what starts to happen for people after they do it for a while.
It feels very meditative. It feels like you're really starting to tap into a deeper part of yourself that we all like hush for some reason. Like, I think it's just like, we're putting up a wall to just protect ourselves from just life the way it is. But sometimes when we take that minute to pause, because as you were talking about that, I was like, oh God, so stressful to write 3 minutes every morning.
Like, it's just, brain it's just working. 3 minutes.
Like, it's not that long at all. But yeah, that's really fascinating. I love that. So I know you kind of wrote an ebook for An Expansive Year. And can you tell us a little bit about that, and also what the creative prompts are to kind of like help people kind of in the same world, like in all that fun stuff?
Yeah, that actually just came out of me doing that for a year with my groups, which was, it was compiling the prompts that I would send out to everybody, which is, once you've been doing morning pages for as many years as I have and a lot of the people in my groups have, it is really helpful to just have prompts to keep diving deeper and listen into that voice, like you were just saying, Corbin, like invite that voice out more in the pages instead of going to the to-do list and the brain dump. So a lot of the prompts are bigger imagination things, like, what are 20 horrible movie ideas? And if you start writing your pages from that place and then keep going the three pages, it's fun. Yeah. It is expansive for your imagination. And that's what I really just want people to keep diving into.
Mm-hmm. What's your worst movie idea?
Isn't this how it works? My worst movie idea, I guarantee, became like my most inspiring thing that I would watch that. That's a ridiculous sci-fi comedy. Like, it would be some ridiculous sci-fi comedy. And I'm like, that could work.
Yeah, I like that.
I had a question, Barbara, and I love this thing about the prompts. How do you feel like when people, this kind of, you're saying about the writing the minute and a half and then people kind of wanting to stop? I think that moment of like wanting to quit something is really important. And I just heard this thing I really liked, which was, if you have like a child playing a sport and they don't want to do it, make sure they're quitting on like a good day, not a bad day, which I thought was really interesting. So on a bad day, it's like, you know, everything went wrong, I want to quit. It's like, well, let's come back next week. And if you're having a great day, see if you still want to quit, or just see if it's just in that moment, you know, because that's one thing I think about, you know, with my son who's 8, is like, I really want him to like, not that he has to do anything as far as like a sport or an instrument, but I wanted to like finish the season, you know, like, let's try to finish the season unless it's terrible, and then we can reevaluate. But I like this idea. And I think sometimes that moment where we're, oh God, like I'm just so struggling with this scene for acting, or, you know, something's not, you know, working out. And then kind of you push through that and then you kind of reach a new level or a new plateau.
Yeah, it's so interesting that, and I'm not there yet. Mine's only 2, but I'm like, how are we going to do with that? That's very different when you've spent all this money and you're like, don't you like basketball? Let's just try. So we'll see what I do in that. But what I found in this process in groups with so many people is, we are so much more, like I keep saying, non-linear than we realize. And one thing I always bring up in the groups too, because this book was written so long ago, is what we now know about neurodivergency and how differently people work. So the one thing I'll affirm too is what I say to everyone in the group is like, it's okay to take a break. Let's take a break to check back in with your excitement level in a day, a week, like you just said, John, whatever that may be. I think people have such a fear that it's all or nothing, or you're in or you're out. And I'm like, I think we are more malleable, again, growth mindset in that, letting ourselves be nonlinear, especially as creatives. It's important and it feels quite vulnerable. I think people really beat themselves up about that. And it's something to love ourselves through, not beat ourselves up about.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I like that. You have something. Is that what the Howling Hive is, or is the Howling Hive something different? Yeah, is that your group?
Yeah, well, the Howling Hive is everything I do. So there are groups, one-on-one sessions, all of that. And it's like a spot of healing for creatives who want all of this, more ease, play, flow in life.
Mm. Yep. I also noticed on there, I was really curious. My wife just got a book from her best friend that's called Human Design. And I noticed you do stuff in that war. You just made a
buckle up.
could you just kind of help us dip our toe in that world? Because it's very new to me. I literally just heard about it like 2 weeks ago. So it's very new. And then I saw that you deal with that too.
That's great. It's my favorite thing. And it's really exciting. Most people now come to me through groups, but then we end up doing sessions and things like Human Design and all of that. Because Human Design is, quite simply, you could think, if you like astrology times 100, but it really shows you like the energetic blueprint just of what makes you you. And the most practical application is, it pretty much is what I was just saying. We all have an energy flow that works differently. Some people are more nonlinear. Some people really hover above and see things from a different perspective and are here to guide other people. So how does your energy want to flow? And then it tells us how to best listen into your own intuition, because we hear the same buzzwords like trust your gut. Mm-hmm. And that's just not really the truth for everyone. So it lets you tap into your intuition, and then it gives you strategies to like best make decisions to stay in your flow. Mm-hmm.
How do you build those strategies? Like, is that just something that you're just going through the book and the process, or like how does, I don't know a lot about it, so I'm just kind of curious.
Yeah, it tells you like your best strategy. And then again, the full name of it is the Human Design Experiment. It's really experimenting every day, like with trust, we keep saying trust, of how you listen in and trust that strategy is highly illogical. Just a little spoiler alert, no one's authority and intuition is coming from their head. It's coming from a deeper place. So it's like, here's how I'm going to trust and the strategies to best make decisions. For instance, like I'm a projector, and mine is to wait for the invitation. And I went, this is ridiculous. When I got to Human Design, I went, no one's going to invite me anywhere. How do you wait for an invitation as an actor? But the truth is this, like the Howling Hive was born because I was sort of already living that. I was over here following my own interests that had nothing to do with acting, doing this other fun expansion. And interestingly, I was still acting, but these invitations just started to come. That also for me was taking pressure off. And I was like, what do you mean? I could just be having fun in an acting class. And somebody was like, come be in my feature. And I went, is this how it's supposed to work? And maybe, could it be this easy?
Yeah. I love that. Oh my gosh. Well, Barbara, this has been amazing. I've just loved everything you've said. Yeah. And I love your energy, very articulate. And I think the things you hit on, what's really neat and special, neat's not really a good word, but what's really neat is, neat again, what I like about it is, Barbara, it's so important, whatever field people are in, to have these things of like trust, creativity, openness, you know, beginner mind. I think that's so useful, right? And I love hearing it because I think applicable, that's the word. It's really applicable to so much stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I hope people really hear that and think about it and, you know, see if they, you know, want to join one of your groups or, you know, pick up the book or even just think about these things for themselves and how they approach it. You know, if they're in a good place, great. But sometimes, you know, we go through different waves of it and it's nice to kind of get re-inspired. You know, how do you find that? I always talk about that. What are the things that inspired you to first get into this field? How do you re-tap into those things later on, you know, when it changes?
Mm-hmm. Yes, always more fun and play to be found.
Yes, exactly. So we have one thing we like to do before we end the podcast, which is
your best bad acting.
So we got a fun quote for you. We pulled this. This is a Phoebe from Friends quote because we thought it'd be fun. Yes, are you? Okay.
We're super nailing excited.
Today. Yeah, the books.
Super excited, you too.
Okay. So this is a really fun one. The fun part about it, I mean, we all, or you know, a lot of people know Phoebe from Friends. Put your own spin on it. If you want to do an accent, the point is to be bad. The point is to have fun. It's kind of a fun line already, but we might give you a redirect, but just to kind of play.
Okay, here we go. Yeah. Didn't you ever run so fast you thought your legs were going to fall off? You know, like you were running toward the swings or running from Satan?
Yes, I love this character.
That was great.
She got a little demonic. I didn't even know the Satan line was coming, but I guess it fit.
It's kind of intense. Yeah, that was like a kid's horror movie. Corbin, do you have a redirect?
Oh, I'm trying to think. I kind of want to hear, could lean more into the creepy horror and do like a little kid is talking about this, like a little.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Didn't you ever run so fast? You thought your legs were like going to fall off, you know, like you were running toward the swings or you were running from Satan.
Good, good. For some reason, when I hear Julia Cameron, I think of James Cameron. So this is, you're in an epic, you're in Avatar 4, and you're like announcing this, you know, this is like a big, this is monumental.
Okay. Didn't you ever run so fast you thought your legs were going to fall off? You know, like you were running toward the swings or running from Satan.
I feel so hyped.
You know what's so funny? All three of those, I felt no Phoebe. That was amazing, yeah, Barbara. You completely made it your own.
And they're all so different.
They're all so different. Oh, man. Barbara, this was great. This was great. It was so fun. Yeah, it was so lovely having you. Thank you. Like, you know, thank you for sharing everything. It like got me re-excited about the Artist Way, which I've been a fan of for a long time, and I do suggest it to people. And so I love what you're doing. Where can people find more about you, out about you?
Our website is just thehowlinghive.org, okay, or on the socials at thehowlinghive.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it. This was great. So enjoy the rest of your day, Barbara.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the
Moon and Flashlight Podcast.